numbers are rolling?
Yep.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Is that working? Good afternoon, everyone. Can everybody hear me okay? Is that working? My name is Linda Teodosio, and as president of the First Friday Club of Greater Akron, I would like to thank you for attending today's program. I would especially like to thank Peter Shonson Associates for their generosity in sponsoring today's program, as well as thanking the other sponsors that are listed in our program, the other supporters of our First Friday Club. Before we get started, I would ask that everyone either turn off or silence their cell phones so as not to interrupt today's talk. We've had a slight change in our speaker for today. Earlier this week, we did receive notification from Brother David Andrews that he was suffering from some health problems. He's having numerous tests done. He's got kidney, liver, and heart issues, and basically is not able to walk or travel at the present time. And so he definitely regrets the fact that he could not be with us today. We, of course, wish him a very speedy recovery, and I would ask that everyone keep him in your prayers. Fortunately, we do have a local expert who's able to step right in and still speak about the environmental issues that we had hoped to hear about today, so I know that you won't be disappointed in what you're going to hear. At this time, it is my pleasure to introduce Jim Peters, one of our sponsors for today, who will give our invocation.
Let us pray. Good and gracious God, whose Spirit moved over the face of the water, who gathers the seas into their places and directs the courses of the rivers, who sends rain upon the earth that it should bring forth life, we praise you for the gift of water. Create in us such a sense of wonder and delight in this and all your gifts, that we might receive them with gratitude, care for them with love, and generously share with them all and share them with all your creatures. To the honor and glory of your holy name. Amen.
I would now like to introduce Chris Norman, who is the Executive Director of Crown Point Ecology Center, who will introduce today's speaker.
Good afternoon. And I extend my well wishes to Brother Andrews that he has full and speedy health and recovery soon. Well, what an honor to have the chance to introduce Dr. Leith this afternoon. When I read about the topic, integrity of creation, energy, and Catholic social teaching, I leapt at the chance to come and hear her speak. This topic really resonates for Crown Point Ecology Center. Crown Point, as I'm sure you know, is one of two local ministries of the Dominican Sisters of Peace, and we are really excited that our sister ministry, Our Lady of the Elms, celebrates their 90th anniversary this year. Go Panthers! So Crown Point, as you know, is an organic farm and education center in Bath. We have been demonstrating the practical applications of ecology and connecting spirituality with social justice and environmental protection, and we are thrilled to celebrate our 25th anniversary next year. If you've not been out to Crown Point, this is the end of my infomercial, but you're welcome to come anytime, sunrise, sunset. Last week, Robert Buchanan came. He's the founder of Polar Bears International, and he came and he spoke in this room addressing the Summit of Sustainability. I was there representing the Summit Food Policy Coalition. And to hear Mr. Buchanan speak, he mentioned three key things that we need in addressing the issues surrounding clean air and clean water. The need for hope. You've got to have hope. This can seem very daunting at times, but hope will carry us through. We need to have the courage to take the small steps. Unplug your appliances when you're not using them. Recycle, buy local. Take the small steps. It's important. And third, give thanks. When you catch somebody picking up some random piece of trash outside, thank them. When you see them recycling, thank them. thank your spouse, thank your family members, thank yourself. These steps are important, and they add up to the change that we need to engage in. It's not just future generations, it's our own that need this. And I want to start by thanking Dr. Lee for coming to speak. When I was reading Dr. Lee's bio, I was really impressed that this was all happening from one woman. Incredible. Dr. Leith is the director of Catholic Commission of Summit County. She was named director in 2010. She's been associate director since 2006 and was associated with the commission starting as early as 1984 as board member and chair. She has served as director of Call for Renewal of Summit County, and in her position with the commission, she serves as coordinator of the Diocesan Education and Training Center for Social Justice Ministry. She's a certified pastoral minister. She's a social psychologist. She's an author and an educator, teaching both as an adjunct at John Carroll University and Baldwin Wallace College in psychology and religious studies. Besides her presentations and publications in psychology and religious studies and journals, she's authored Justice and Peace Ministers, 8 spiritual formation sessions for the Center of Learning, and has edited the Partnering Handbook of the Diocese of Cleveland. And I noted among her other programs, she's taught labyrinth walks, which we have a labyrinth at Crown Point. She's really cool. I just about lost track of the number of degrees that Dr. Leith holds. She has a BA in mathematics and economics from Brown, an MA in religious studies from John Carroll, and an MA in psychology and a PhD in experimental psychology from Case Western Reserve. Dr. Leith, thank you so much for coming to speak with us. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Karen Leith.
Okay, I'm not the lawyer who is going to be here, and I'm not an environmental scientist, but I am someone who really knows Catholic social teaching, and I ask a lot of questions. I'm not afraid to ask questions and look at the way we make decisions. So in order to stay on today's original topic for today, we need to start with a basic definition of integrity. Obviously, Brother David Andrews chose his title very carefully, The Integrity of Creation. And that's a good way to start. You know, basically, in the dictionary offers us 2 definitions. The primary one is basically the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. Of being honest and having strong moral principles. And the second is the state of being whole and undivided. While the first applies to us as individuals in our relationship with creation, the second can be applied to creation itself. We more and more as Catholics have come to understand all of God's creation as being whole and undivided. If we then start with the first chapter of Genesis, we need to see the whole of creation, not just humankind, as good. Remember, each day God looked at what God had created and said, "It is good. It is very good." As Pope Benedict XVI explained in Caritas in Veritate, nature expresses a design of love and truth. It is prior to us, and it has been given to us by God as the setting for our life. Nature speaks to us of the Creator and His love for humanity. It is destined to be recapitulated in Christ at the end of time. Thus, it too is a vocation. While humans are at the top of the hierarchy, or the center of the web of life, all of creation is from the Creator. and is deemed good. It is here that we have our foundation for two basic principles of Catholic social teaching: respect and dignity for all life, and care for all God's creation. We come to understand that we need to respect all of God's creation as a unified whole, one where we do find our shelter, our food, and resources for all our needs, but one that must be respected and held in balance if we are to respect the common good, another principle, of even generations to come. As Pope John Paul II, in an address to the participants of the Environment and Health Convention in March of 1997, stated, quote, "If humanity today succeeds in combining the new scientific capacities with a strong ethical dimension, it will certainly be able to promote the environment as a home and a resource for man and all men, and will be able to eliminate the causes of pollution and to guarantee adequate conditions of hygiene and health for small groups, as well as for vast human settlements. Technology that pollutes can also cleanse. Production that amasses can also distribute justly, on condition that the ethic of respect for life and human dignity, for the rights of today's generations and those to come, prevails." So where does energy fit into this unified picture? And how does Catholic social teaching inform and guide us as we develop new forms of energy? Obviously, we have developed many of the Earth's resources in meeting our basic survival and comfort needs. Resources such as coal, oil, gas, water, even nuclear. But as we have developed these resources, we have also discovered issues such as pollution, depletion, contamination, to name but a few. How then do we respect the environment and respect life? How do we make prudent decisions? How are we informed by our tradition? In 1981, in the midst of another energy crisis, the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops issued a short statement reflecting on the tensions we face since, quote, "No overall energy strategy is free from risk to human life," unquote. The bishops reminded us that we have duties as well as rights, another basic principle of Catholic social teaching, and that these include making sacrifices for the sake of the common good and respect for the unity of all creation. The energy policies we choose must reflect a search after justice for all, not only on the level of individual rights, but also with regard to the structures of society. Quote, "giving special attention to the needs of the poor and members of minority groups," unquote. In 1994, the USCCB issued its pastoral statement, an invitation to reflection and action on environment in light of Catholic social teaching. We've got a rich tradition here. This statement was a reflection on Pope John Paul II's 1989 statement, "The Ecological Crisis, a Common Responsibility," in which Pope John Paul II stated, quote, "Faced with the widespread destruction of the environment, people everywhere are coming to understand that we cannot continue to use the goods of the earth as we have in the past. A new ecological awareness is beginning to emerge. The ecological crisis is a moral issue, unquote. The bishops, in their document, included a lengthy list of the devastation we're seeing due to our energy strategies. To quote, "The effects of environmental degradation surround us, the smog in our cities, chemicals in our water and our food, eroded topsoil blowing in the wind, the loss of valuable wetlands, radioactive and toxic waste lacking adequate disposal sites, threats to the health of industrial and farm workers. The problems, however, reach far beyond our own neighborhoods and workplaces. Our problems are the world's problems and burdens for generations to come. Poisoned water crosses borders freely. Acid rain pours on countries that do not create it. Greenhouse gases and chlorofluorocarbons affect the Earth's atmosphere for many decades, regardless of where they are produced or used." To that, we can add from our experiences: earthquakes in Youngstown, contaminated drinking water supplies in Pennsylvania, and even in Geauga County, excess diesel emissions, contaminated land. Think of your own. You've seen them. But we are a hope-filled people. We have a tradition that is rich in presenting Catholic morals and principles as a way to find a better path. Therefore, reflecting on scriptures in our tradition, the bishops lead us in this discussion because they go on to remind us. One, respect for nature and respect for life are inextricably related. Respect for life, and above all for the dignity of the human person, Pope John Paul II has written, extends also to the rest of creation. Other species, ecosystems, and even distinctive landscapes give glory to God. Respect for all life is our most fundamental principle. And the last three popes especially have challenged us to think beyond the human person to all of creation in terms of that respect for life. Every Catholic principle stems from respect for life. It is totally foundational. Therefore, our prudent decisions must always ask the impact on life and its dignity. Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict XVI, and now Pope Francis have all stressed that the question applies to the complete web of life, but with a definite focus on human life. In his message for World Food Day that just happened, Pope Francis stated, "However, the waste of food is but one of the fruits of the throwaway culture, which often leads to sacrificing men and women to the idols of profit and consumption, a sad sign of the globalization of indifference, which makes us accustomed slowly to the suffering of others, as if it were something normal. To educate in solidarity means, therefore, to educate ourselves in humanity. To build a society that is truly human means to always put the person and his or her dignity at the center and never sell him or her off cheaply to the logic of profit. The human being and his or her dignity are pillars on which to build shared rules and structures that overcoming pragmatism or the mere technical data are capable of eliminating divisions and of more than satisfying the existing differences. Pope Francis, just a few days ago. The second principle that is consistent in all the documents is the universal common good can serve as a foundation for a global environmental ethic. We as Christians always talk about the common good. Always. Starting with Pope John 23rd in his 1963 encyclical Pax Sementeris, there has been an emphasis on the world's growing interdependence. In the bishop's statement, it goes on to say, ecological concern has now heightened our awareness of just how interdependent our world is. Some of the gravest environmental problems are clearly global. In this shrinking world, everyone is affected and everyone is responsible. Although those most responsible are often the least affected. Those most responsible are often the least affected. That's really something to think about. And if you actually look at the latest news, you can constantly see that we're affected. We're still seeing basically floating pieces and life forms coming from the Japanese coast onto our west coast, and the danger of bringing in life forms that would damage our ecosystem. We're worried about Lake Erie and what's been introduced in Lake Erie. And, you know, you can create a long list of these global concerns. There is a consistency across all issues in terms of the common good. Therefore, we need to consider an option for the poor in that. And that's where we have been the voice, that option for the poor. In other places and in many documents in the Catholic tradition, we are reminded that not only are the most responsible the least affected, but the most vulnerable are also the most affected. And these voices are the ones that are not heard. They're not part of the decision-making process. And they don't have the resources to deal with the consequences. Our outlook on the integrity of creation and the common good of all people is especially pressing in relationship to the issue of climate change and energy usage and development. In the 2001 statement, Global Climate Change, A Plea for Dialogue, Prudence and the Common Good, the Catholic bishops of the United States taught, quote, "The challenge of global climate change is a preeminent example of how our debate and decision should reflect the pursuit of the common good, rather than search for economic, political, or other narrow advantage," unquote. We must promote policies and activities that ensure access to less polluting sources of energy for all humanity with respect to biodiversity and future generations, which are the common heritage of humankind. The Church itself has responded to these concerns in a variety of ways. Universally, in Ohio, in our own diocese, these have included the installation of 2,400 photovoltaic panels on the Vatican's Pope Paul VI Audience Hall, our hosting of a conversation for Ohio in 2007, which Archbishop Celestino Migliore, the then permanent observer of the Holy See to the United Nations, and numerous and parish school-level efforts to improve energy efficiencies. Right here in Summit County, we have examples with St. Paul's School that even composts at lunchtime, has changed all their light bulbs. We have examples in St. Hilary's Parish with their triple garbage cans and their reminder of shutting off lights and being energy efficient. These are places that are looking at their carbon footprint and taking action. We look at our Catholic high schools. Magnificat's been leading the way in that, in terms of looking at how much garbage is produced, how much recycling has been done. Pope Benedict XVI has repeatedly reminded us of our need to address this issue through reducing energy consumption, promoting energy efficiency, and utilizing forms of energy with lower impact on the environment. Our young are leading us in this ecological concern. I can't tell you how many changes we've made based on my children and their families who have challenged our practices and introduced us to new practices. It is truly the young leading us. Third point, the bishops remind us that ecological problem is intimately connected to justice for the poor. Quote, the goods of the earth, which in the divine plan should be a common patrimony, Pope John Paul II has reminded us, often risk becoming the monopoly of a few who spoil it and sometimes destroy it, thereby creating a loss for all humanity, unquote. Let us now turn our attention to the needs and issues in our state. You know, one thing when I said yes, I think most people who know me know I'm not afraid to take issues on head on. So in order to address poverty by better meeting our basic needs as home, as well as facilitating greater employment in our state, efficient and affordable energy is essential. We recognize that today this requires a broad spectrum of energy sources, including newer alternatives, such as solar and wind, as well as, for the present, continued reliance on Ohio's traditional sources, such as coal and natural gas. Our extraction and use of these energy sources must also and always take care to not create an undue burden on the poor, those working in energy-related industries, or our low-income communities. At all times, however, energy efficiency and less wasteful consumption increased through new technologies and mindful behaviors should be viewed as our state's most valuable energy resource. The use of more efficient light bulbs, recycling, the increase even of farmers markets and urban gardening are examples of a growing awareness and a desire to be more mindful of energy consumption as well as the complex needs of the poor. We just had the Fair Trade Expo, and I was talking to a professor from California who is so impressed with Northeast Ohio and the number of farmers markets, urban gardens, CSAs, consumer-supported agriculture that we have in this area as people are becoming more aware of reducing our carbon footprint. So such awareness can lead to greater stewardship of our limited resources as well as a reduction in utility bills of those who struggle to make ends meet. I think all of us are aware of the increased number of poor unable to pay their utility bills and the drain on money such that most organizations and nonprofits are running out of money halfway through the winter. The poor of the earth offer a special test for our solidarity. We must not forget that not only are the poor most affected, but they do not have the resources for relief from their suffering. Society's concern for the environment requires that we Catholics examine our own stewardship of God's creation and our responsibility to those who come after us. Echoing numerous appeals from the Vatican and the U.S. Catholic bishops in this regard, we have a need to take seriously the need to educate and raise questions about new methods of drilling in Northeast Ohio, which have a promise of developing jobs, but also have a prospect of damaging the environment for future generations. In this regard, Bishop Giampaolo Crepaldi, Secretary of the Pontifical College for Justice and Peace, says, quote, "Ecological questions highlight the need to achieve a greater harmony both between measures designed to foment economic development and those directed to preserving the ecology, and between state, national, and international policies. Economic development, moreover, needs to take into consideration the integrity and rhythm of nature because natural resources are limited. And all economic activity that uses natural resources should also include the costs of safeguarding the environment into the calculations of the overall costs of the activities." Unquote. So what are we talking about? What is our newest challenge in this state? Hydraulic fracturing. Fracking, as it is commonly called. What is this? Hydraulic fracturing causes the development of fractures in a rock layer through the use of highly pressurized fluids. Hydraulic fractures form naturally, as in the case of veins or dikes, and are means by which gas and petroleum from source rocks may migrate into reservoir rocks. Energy companies can attempt to accelerate this process in order to release petroleum, natural gas, coal seam gas, or other substances for extraction. Via this technique, induced hydraulic fracturing, often shortened to fracking or hydrofracking. Well, fracturing has been around since the mid-1940s. The new methods introduced in the 1990s used high-volume hydraulic fracturing. This is a horizontal fracturing that is used in the completion of tight gas and shale gas wells. And we sit on top of two, Utica and the Marcellus shale fields. High volume hydraulic fracturing typically uses as much as 5 million gallons of water. Think about that. With substantial chemical mixes per well. This latest practice has come under scrutiny internationally, with some countries suspending it or even banning it completely. Fracturing was first performed in 1947 though the current fracking technique was first used in the late 1990s in the Barnett Shale in Texas. The energy from the injection of highly pressurized fracking fluid creates channels in the rock which can increase the extraction rates and ultimate recovery of fossil fuels. In fact, the Barnett Shale is the Fort Worth, Texas piece. It is our best example long-term of what happens with what's considered urban fracturing. Why the concern? High-volume horizontal fracturing is being used to access oil and gas reserves in both the Utica and Marcellus shales, which are hidden deep beneath the surface of the eastern part of Ohio. Recent seismic activity in Youngstown has been linked to this exploration. In 2007, water wells were found to be contaminated with methane gas, one home even exploding. We certainly acknowledge that hydraulic fracturing is an aid to the economy and job development. Yet, we in our communities need and want to receive qualified, balanced education on this matter so that we can inform ourselves and ask the pertinent questions as citizens that can lead to a responsible regulation policy. Following and employing our Catholic principles of good stewardship and care for God's creation, we will be better able to ensure that as drilling proceeds, the rights of our region's people and the proper care of the environment will be assured. What I'd like to do is propose some questions we need to ask based on the areas of impact. And basically, I compiled the areas of impact from environmental scientists in the area. The first area of impact, and one of the biggest, is water. The amount needed for fracking is 5 million gallons of frack. 5 million gallons of frack. Most wells are fracked multiple times, and any wellhead has multiple fracking. It goes out in the form of a wagon wheel in order to get the most out of the shale. The loss of well or aquifer water through disruption or contamination. You know, the industry keeps trying to address this, but there are still a lot of questions in terms of how much well water is lost, and we have whole towns in Pennsylvania that have lost their source of water. Gas migration causing methane contaminated water, the fate of the produced water, and you've heard the companies now talking about the recycled water. The point is it can be possibly recycled to be used in more fracking wells, but it can never be recycled beyond that because of the particular chemical mixes that are used. Degradation of water quality in local streams and rivers, and we've already seen some illegal dumping here in Ohio, and the degradation of drinking water quality, and therefore the need to purchase bottled water. So what are these questions? Water is actually a scarce resource. Who is affected by the great amounts of water removed from general use? Okay. How are the water tables affected? What protections exist for our aquifers? Who takes responsibility? You know, the companies have said that they'll take responsibility for contaminated wells, but you have to prove it was them. So you better have your water tested before they're fracking. Is this a justifiable use of these great amounts of water? And are we being responsible stewards? Land usage. Next huge impact. Large amounts of acreage are needed for well pads and impoundments. As long as a well can be re-stimulated, the well pad will remain active. Leased areas, former private and public lands, become restricted access. Public lands and parks are no longer public as they're off limits due to safety. Questions to ask. We are an interdependent entity in which urban, suburban, and rural communities depend on one another for meeting basic human needs. Public lands and parks are for the rest and relaxation. They offer places of recreation for all. Ohio is an agricultural state. The great use of land impacts our farms, both in terms of their ability to produce, as well as the quality of farm products. Do we see ourselves as truly interdependent? is the amount of land needed for hydraulic fracturing, as well as the effect it has on the land in balance with other needs. Is it an ethical use of land? Do we know enough about the long-lasting effects in making the decisions? Are we being responsible stewards of all the land, and are we representing all who are affected by its use? Do we see the goodness of all God's creation? And I would recommend you go on Food and Water Watch. They have a brand new report on what's happened now in Pennsylvania. This is a great example for us. Next is exposure to toxic chemicals, the fracking fluids. Not all these chemicals are listed because each company claims they have copyright and patents on their mix of chemicals. So we have no idea what's in those. So we need to ask those questions. And what is the collective or common good in regard to the technique, therefore? There's traffic and road degradation. These, you know, there is the fluids that must be taken out of the well and transported and stored properly. There's the air pollution that results from the large use of trucks. There's just increased vehicle traffic, compressor stations, well blowouts that can therefore contaminate the land. You know, so the life and dignity of the person here is at stake. Noise pollution and air pollution have effects on health and well-being. Are we making decisions that respect the life and dignity of all life? Property devaluation. That fracked land is not going to be good for anything else. And we're starting to see that in the abandoned farms in Pennsylvania. We're starting to see that in the Fort Worth area of Texas. EMS and emergency procedures. I was talking to Dennis Sadowski last week, and we're talking about the hidden costs in terms of the skilled workers that come in are from Texas. These companies are not going to start training new people. So the people in the area, when they talk about increased jobs, get the low-paying, undesirable jobs in all of this. Because these people have to be housed, rents go way up. They push out people from their own communities who can no longer afford this. We've got to look at all of this. And in the last few minutes, I want to offer something. I was afraid I wasn't going to have enough information. I was reading an article that Brother David Andrew wrote recently, where he was looking at the New York bishops and the way they analyzed their decision to come out in favor of banning fracking in New York. And he talked about the fact that as Americans, we do cost-benefit analysis. What he pointed out in his article is there's a precautionary principle, which is a mode of analysis that was formalized in 1992 by the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development in Rio de Janeiro. And it emphasizes the discipline of precaution being carefully exercised to avoid potential harm and unforeseen and unintended consequences. He pointed out in this article that we're seeing, we saw Benedict XVI using this, if you analyze some of the things he talked about and some of his talks on the environment, and the fact that we already see Pope Francis basically using this concept. And this principle, one, requires that precaution should prevail whenever questions of human and environmental health are involved. Two, that it mandates restraint until cause and effect relationships are properly understood. It places the primary burden of demonstrating safety on the developer, and thorough examination for potential harm is a prerequisite in determining and demonstrating such safety. Benedict XVI used that principle in his comments on technical developments in food production that can also be applied to energy. Benedict stated, "It is an alternative vision to that determined by internal and international measures, which seems to have as their sole objective profit. The defense of markets, the use of agricultural products for ends other than food, and the introduction of new techniques of production without the necessary precaution." So basically, we need to use the virtue of prudence. You know, that's something else you'll find a theme in all the documents. Prudence. This traditional virtue suggests that we do not have to know the absolute certainty of everything that is happening with climate change, with the energy, but with the related search for energy technologies, we need, if we have any indication that something might be harmful, it is better to act now than to wait until the problem gets worse and the remedies more costly. Prudence is a traditional virtue in our faith, and it calls us to take a step back, to look at the riches of our tradition and to ask real questions and demand real answers. We have the research in the areas that have been fracking to look at. We need to learn our lessons. And I'm getting a sign, my time's up. Thank you.
Wow, that was amazing. You have given us a lot to think about, and I'm glad that we have so many students here today, because certainly what's going on in our environment affects them more than anyone, as they are going to be our future leaders. At this time, I would offer you the opportunity to ask some questions. There should be cards on all of the tables on which you can write down a question if you have them. One of our volunteers will be around to collect them. And while you're working on your questions and we're getting those collected, I do have a few announcements to make. Our next First Friday Club luncheon will be on Friday, December 6, 2013, here at the Quaker Station at Quaker Square, and will feature John Allen, Senior Vatican Correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. And he's kind of become a yearly fixture here at our First Friday Club, and he is entertaining, knowledgeable, and I'm sure he'll have a lot to share with all of us in light of our new Pope. So I think that it will be a luncheon that you won't want to miss, and being enriched by his words of wisdom and his knowledge would be a nice way to kick off the Christmas and Advent season. Reservations for all First Friday Club events can be made by sending a check for $15 to the First Friday Club of Greater Akron at 795 Russell Avenue in Akron. The phone number can be found on the brochures, but for those of us listening on a podcast, it's 330-535-7668, and there's more information on the website at www.firstfridayclubofgreaterakron.org. There are also brochures on each of the table. I invite you to take them with you. John Allen will be the last speaker in our 2013 season, and we'll be getting ready to start our next season in 2014. And there are schedules for those on each of your tables. I invite you to take them with you. On the reverse side of the schedule for next year, there's information about subscriptions. I would suggest that they would make a perfect Christmas gift for someone that you don't know what else to buy, because it really is an opportunity to come to be educated, to have an opportunity to network and socialize with other folks that find their faith to be important. So please take a look at that. You can hear podcasts of today's presentation as well as our previous presentations by logging on to the website and downloading a podcast.
I would like to make a request of everyone here today. If you feel that you have a little bit of extra time or you have some time to volunteer or donate to the First Friday Club, these speaker series don't happen by accident. And as we found out last week, we have a very strong community that is able to rise to the occasion and provide us with an extraordinary presentation. But we could certainly use some assistance with things such as preparing paperwork, arranging luncheons, if anybody has a particular expertise in an area of IT that could help us do some things that we currently do by hand electronically. All those things would be greatly appreciated. And if you either call into the First Friday Club office or email them with your contact information, I or one of the other board members will certainly get a hold of you and find a place for you to use your many talents. So really look into your heart and see if you have some time to give to help support this wonderful luncheon. At this time, it's my pleasure to recognize the students that are here with us today. We do have students from Archbishop Hoban High School, Walsh Jesuit, Our Lady of the Elms, and I think first-time guests, Magnificat. So we would like to have those students all stand so we can recognize you and thank you for being here today. Thank you. And do we have any first-time attendees that I could ask to wave a hand or stand and be welcomed? Any first-time attendees? I bet they're all shy, but we welcome you. Over there? Okay. Thank you. We welcome you. At this time, do we have some questions? So bring Karen back up.
Try not to make it too bad. How do we convince fracking companies that their practices are somewhat unsafe?
I think they know. It's a matter of how do we deal with the political climate that works with sound bites. There's someone in the state who has agreed to lease to a fracking company, and they were so proud of themselves that they put that 50% of the workers had to be hired locally. But everyone knows that these companies are not going to spend the kind of money to train the drillers and everything they need. When I was talking to Dennis Sadowski, for those that you don't know, who don't know Dennis, he is the former editor of the Catholic Universe Bulletin. He now is staff for Catholic News Services. And he's doing a series of articles. So we were talking about what he's discovering. And he said no matter what fracking site he's been visiting, which the towns, he's not allowed anywhere near the well sites, he said that the number of Texas license plates is overwhelming. And that the local jobs are going in the subcontracting to the truckers who are trucking the water. Basically, we've been encountering, because my son lives in New Jersey, and as we go east, we've been encountering a lot of unmarked trucks coming from Pennsylvania here. There are places that don't allow the disposal of the contaminated water in their own states, and guess what? Ohio is taking it, because we have defunct natural gas wells that go straight down, and they figure they can dump the water in those. There's a lot of questions. And if you don't let your voices be heard, and it was really interesting when this debate was heating up and everyone realized that the General Assembly pulled a fast one in taking local rule away on this issue, a lot of towns and even counties are very upset. And my daughter lives with her family in Kent. And Kent's water supply has been rated one of the best in the state. And she said, Mom, you'd be so proud of me. I got out there and I got out at that city council meeting and I supported the fact that we don't want fracking in our area. And, you know, that's what it takes to raise awareness, and that's our responsibility. Remember, the bishops keep talking. You know, one of Catholic social principles is both our duty and responsibility, you know, that responsibility, the rights and the responsibilities, the duties and the responsibilities. We have a responsibility to ask the questions and to speak out.
simple one. Can you tell us how to spot a fracking pad and well?
It's huge. I think it was the Ohio State University's extension program that has some excellent pictures. They're a mile square because of the number of trucks, the pits that have to be dug, the tanks that have to be put in. They're absolutely incredible. Also, in our office, and we have for loan, a DVD of a program we did in this diocese, and Pat O'Brien, my colleague who's sitting in the back there, Pat and I were able to write a proposal, and Pat found some excellent speakers, including an excellent scientist from Duquesne University who came with film that where he did flyovers of fracking sites, and they exist on this DVD if you want to see it. He can't show those anymore. He's being sued.
So we're no longer able to sell the DVD? Is that
correct? No, we can, from what I understand.
If you go through Karen, we can get, for $10, we can get you the DVD.
As a psychologist, how do you explain the human psychology behind the society's lack of long-term concern for the preservation of natural resources and the environment? It should make logical common sense.
But we don't think all the time with our heads. We react. And part of it is cultural, too. We as a culture, you know, if you look across the board in terms of, you know, the gap we have between the poor and the rich in this country, the way we've segregated ourselves in neighborhoods where we don't ever have to encounter those who are different from us, it's very cultural. And the way our families are now separated, I know in our family, it takes a real effort for us to keep reminding ourselves we're family and we need to know each other and get together on a regular basis. But those are the things. When we're more family-centered, we think more about children and grandchildren and what we're leaving as our legacy. The more separate we are and the more we don't understand our connection to other cultures and other people just in this U.S. and other socioeconomic classes different from us, the easier it is to say, I can take care of myself, you know, they're going to take care of themselves. And I think that's where we've come as a society. And I think it's unique to us in this country.
Is there any pending legislation on the state level in regards to fracking?
The state would tell you they've passed the regulations, but ask if there are enough regulators to basically take care of those regulations, and there's nothing pending right now, and they think they've done it, and I've encountered county council members where I've said, you've got to open your eyes, and it's like, hey, get used to it, fracking's here to stay. That was the answer I got. But we have to keep demanding. We just have to keep demanding. We don't have to sit back and say, it's here, and therefore we have to put up with it. We've got to do a lot more education and pushing on this one.
That concludes the questions, but I have one more aside to mention about Karen that wasn't mentioned yet. On December 6th, the Bishop Cosgrove Justice Dinner is being held, and Karen is being honored as the recipient of the Bishop Cosgrove Peace and Justice Award for the year 2013. So I think we need to recognize her for that. And you, if you would like to join in honoring her, I have tickets.
I will take some.
I once again want to thank Peter Schantz and Associates for sponsoring today's presentation. I think it gave us all a lot to think about and certainly educated us quite a bit. And at this time, I would like to introduce David Schantz to come up and lead us in our closing prayer.
Thank you, Linda. I'll take a moment. As we breathe the very air which sustains us, we remember your love, God, which gives life. Fill us with your compassion for creation. Empty us of apathy, selfishness, and fear. Empty us of all pessimism and hesitation. Breathe into us solidarity with all who suffer now and the future generations who will suffer because of our environmental irresponsibility. Move us into action to save our earth and to build your sustainable kingdom. Amen. Amen.
Thank you, and everyone have a very enjoyable weekend, and get busy getting a hold of your representatives to deal with the things you've heard about today. Take care, everyone.